You may know America by its cars.
Ford trucks, built Ford tough.
As your family grows, Voyager is the wagon to grow with. Plymouth Voyager, the magic wagon.
Camaro, fiery new creation from Chevrolet.
Sure, cars suck up gas and they promote suburban sprawl, but they also help drive the economy and drive families from home to school to soccer field. And of course, cars fire our imaginations. Paul Ingrassia, who won a Pulitzer Prize for reporting from Detroit for the Wall Street Journal, has written a book about cars that may not all be cherished classics or engineering marvels, but they've earned a place in America's scrapbook. His new book, Engines of Change, A History of the American Dream in 15 Cars. Mr. Ingrassia, who is now Deputy Editor-in-Chief of Reuters, joins us from our studios in New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Scott.
What put a car in this company of 15?
I wanted to write about automobiles that had a distinctive and definable impact on how we think and live as a people. When I looked at modern American culture, I sort of viewed it as this unending tug of war between the practical and the pretentious, between the ordinary and the ostentatious. And a lot of these forces that are reflected in society as a whole are actually reflected and symbolized and captured by different automobiles over the century plus of America's automotive history.
Let's ask you about a few, and we're going to introduce them in a particular way. Here, first car we want to ask you about. There, a car with its own TV show, Route 66.
Yes, exactly.
Two guys driving across America in a Chevy Corvette. So what did the Vette represent in America in the late 50s?
Well, the Vette was actually introduced in 1953, and it was a remarkable watershed year in American history. If you think about it, it was the year that Elvis started recording music. It was the year that Hugh Hefner started Playboy. It was the year the Korean War finally ended. And a generation of Americans really wanted to let loose. And here comes this car that, you know, is really designed for letting loose and living it up. But the truth is, the car was really a lousy car to begin with. It had a weak six-cylinder engine. It didn't have a hard top at all, and the convertible top was notorious for leaking. And so after 2 years, General Motors was ready to kill the car, and a mid-level engineer at Chevrolet wrote these impassioned memos, skipping up several layers of management, in which he makes the argument that, hey, this car will never sell in a lot of numbers, but if you can capture the hearts and imagination of young people, you'll sell a lot of your mainstream cars, which is exactly what the Corvette helped to do over the years.
Let's ask you now about a car that that broke the mold by keeping the same mold from year to year.
Introducing the 1952, 1953, 54, 55, 56, 57.
Oh, you get the idea. We're talking about the Volkswagen Beetle. And, Paul, I have to put the question this bluntly. How did Adolf Hitler's pet car become an icon for the peace-loving granola culture?
What happened was that in the America of the 50s, when, you know, the big tail fin era, the Beetle was a way to show your disdain for that American conspicuous consumption culture. The Volkswagen Beetle was the ideal car for poor people. It was small, reliable, functional, very economical. Poor people wouldn't be caught dead in a Volkswagen Beetle. They wanted the biggest piece of used Detroit iron they could find because, you know, poor people didn't want to look poor. Rich people didn't want to look rich.
Another car to ask you about. The biggest demographic group in history, the baby boomers, began to get their licenses in the mid-1960s. They wanted to look cool, and their parents wanted to look like they weren't the parents of teenagers. And that's Burning Rubber from the 1968 film Bullet, starring, of course, Steve McQueen and a Ford Mustang.
And a Ford Mustang.
on the streets of San Francisco. Jacqueline Bisset was in there, too, as I recall.
Absolutely.
Was the Mustang high performance or just high style?
Well, it was both. I mean, the remarkable thing about the Mustang, which came out in the spring of 1964, was that you could configure it pretty much any way you wanted. And what this car did was it caught the baby boomers just as they were coming of age and really captivated them, partly because it was, in its most basic form, the Mustang was a very inexpensive car, only $2,300, about the price of maybe a new fender today, if you will.
And now finally, we have a car for these times of costly gas and environmental anxieties.
You get more power and more space. The world gets fewer smog-forming emissions.
The Prius. Now I must say, you seem to rather like the Prius. It's Prius owners you find can be a little irritating.
Well, you know,
with all due regard to, I'm sure it must be the 75% of our audience who has one.
Well, first of all, it's a marvel of technology. But what really made the Prius take off was that Toyota gave it a distinct shape. So unlike every other hybrid car out there on the road, you can instantly tell when someone's driving a Prius. So it really let people sort of wear their greenness on their sleeve, Scott.
There's a famous Larry David episode that you find particularly telling.
Yes, in Curb Your Enthusiasm, where, I mean, basically the Prius is a character in the show, if you will. And Larry waves to another Prius driver. The Prius driver does not wave back, and Larry immediately takes off in hot pursuit, and he says,
I waved to a man in a Prius, and he didn't wave back.
I don't wave to people in the same car as me.
Well, we're Prius drivers. We're a special breed.
Special breed.
Paul, there's been a recent spike in auto sales, but is the technology of the car dated? Are there things just over the horizon that will replace it?
Well, there's a lot of technological change coming, and it's really being pushed by high gasoline prices. If you look at this, it's not clear whether hybrids are going to win or high-tech conventional gasoline engines or pure electric cars or whether they'll be hydrogen-powered fuel cells or natural gas cars, for that matter. All we can say is that something's going to change in the future, but that change will probably be delayed for a while as long as they keep making regular gasoline engines more and more efficient and also cleaner, by the way.
Paul Ingracia, his new book, Engines of Change, A History of the American Dream in 15 Cars. Paul, thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott. Pleasure to be with you.
Mustang Sally.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.